This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Welcome to Dreamland, folks. We have an incredible show this week. We're going to be talking to Kim Chesney about radical intuition. I think it's the best show on intuition I've ever done. Very powerful stuff. But first, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about my new book and a few other things, too, which have come up. There have been some high strangeness events that we have posted in the Out There section of unknowncountry.com, and we'll be going over those in a few minutes. First, I'd like to talk about Jesus, A New Vision. The Kindle edition is available now on Amazon.com. You just go to Amazon.com and search on Strieber, Jesus, A New Vision, and you'll find it. The audiobook is finished, and it's with Audible being processed. The paperback and hardcovers are being processed also. So everything within the next month, everything should be posted. But right now, what's available is the Kindle edition. And I've noticed that we have gotten some reviews on something called NetGalley, which I never should have put the book on NetGalley in the first place. But nevertheless, there are a couple of things that are important about this book. First, people are saying, well, where are his credentials? And the answer is they don't know who I am. And I don't know where my credentials come from either. I don't know where the credentials that caused me to conceive of and write Superstorm with Art Bell came from. Where did The Key come from? Where did War Day come from, or any of those books? I don't know is the answer. But this is an authoritative book. It is very deeply and well researched. Another thing that is really rankling them is the fact that it faces the truth about the Shroud of Turin. And they don't like that because they're living in the material illusion. But it is just that. The whole scientific paradigm that we are nothing but meat, nothing but physical bodies, is not true. And what happened in that tomb, in Jesus' tomb, is very straightforward now, very clear. He showed this. He demonstrated it. He was a teacher throughout his life and even after his life. That's what the book is about. And so, yes, the book takes all of the research about the Shroud of Turin that has been done since it was debunked, falsely debunked, in 1988, and takes a new look at what actually happened in that tomb. But that's not all it does. It looks into the Gospels of Mary and Thomas and looks at Jesus' whole life in a completely new way. Something was lost when the Council of Nicaea was instituted in 325 AD, that long ago. They decided that Jesus was a god, like any of the other gods they had in those days, Apollo or any of them. And then they decided he was the only god and destroyed all of their old temples. Understandably, and when you read the book, you'll certainly understand why they did it. But more was happening. And we know that now. And we can understand that now. I want you to listen to a couple of clips from Jesus, A New Vision, from the audiobook, and think about getting the Kindle. Think about also, obviously, if you want to, review the book when you get it. And do realize, though, I have unique authority to do this. There's nobody else in the world who can do the kind of research I do, and I think you all know that. However, the book is carefully backed up. I found out a lot of things on my own, as it were, but then I went into the scholarship that's been done and found support for often things that are very, very obscure, but add up to a completely new vision of Jesus. Listen up. This is from the introduction. Reading the canonical Gospels with the eye of a detective reveals much that has been hidden, more or less in plain sight. For example, it is clear that Jesus intentionally goaded the Romans into killing him. I think that the reason that he did this is understandable, as I will discuss. He was also helped by a group of people who are almost invisible in the Gospels, but not quite. They must have been incredibly learned. In fact, they must have known and understood the secret of death itself, and thus how to surmount it. They were not members of any known order such as the Essenes. So who were they? And for that matter, as he was not a deity come to earth, who was he, really? Using a combination of a re-examination of his story and the application of scientific tools to, for example, study the Shroud of Turin, we can make exciting strides toward recovering the secrets that they must have known. Some of them are hidden in the Shroud, which it would now appear cannot have been a medieval forgery, as was incorrectly concluded back in 1988, as shall be seen. The evidence refuting that conclusion is strong. The implications of the resurrection event are amazing and exciting and have something very new to say not only about Jesus, but about us. Jesus' A New Vision is about a kind of empowerment that we seem to almost be hardwired to resist. He wasn't showing us in that tomb and coming out of that tomb after death, that he was a God separate somehow from us. He was teaching us something about being human that we have been in denial about ever since. The first level of denial was saying he was a God and so different from us we could never be like him. The second level of denial is saying that there is no possibility that he ever walked out of that tomb after death. There's a third possibility, and in order to face it, we have to face the truth about what we really are. The age is changing. A great storm is coming. And unless we face this about ourselves, how powerful we really are, and what we really mean, and that's going to be hard because it makes you look at yourself in a whole new way. But unless we do that, that storm that's coming is going to blow us away. Now, let's change horses, for goodness sakes. There have been some fascinating UFO events lately. As you know, we don't publish much on the Out There section anymore because most of it is not. It's either more lights in the sky and we've seen that and done that, or it's a lot of fakery, simple fakes, most of them. Why people do it, I don't know. It's sort of dying out, actually. People are realizing that they're not going to get a lot of clicks out of another fake UFO story, so they're sort of going into other directions. But these two stories are not, they're very unusual, both of them. The first one I want to talk about is a story about a cow dropping through the roof of a barn on December the 9th. Now, this, you can look at this in the Out There section, and you'll find that this was filmed with a surveillance camera. What isn't said in the story, because the farmer clammed up and wouldn't talk to Linda, wouldn't talk to anybody, but what he initially said to the person who made the, who posted the video, he sent it to him, was that there had been a lot of UFO activity around his farm. He wouldn't say what happened to the cow. In other words, was the cow injured or not? But it, the point is, it was night, and suddenly one of his cows drops through in front of a surveillance camera from the roof, through the roof above, and drops into the barn. Now, you think about what that means. somebody had that animal, and they dropped the animal back into the barn through the roof. You know, I have a feeling that we're going to be facing this sooner or later, what this all is. And it's not going to be all sweetness and light, obviously. I mean, I've learned a lot from the visitors, and I have a wonderful relationship with them, and a lot of you do too. But they're also weird and dangerous, and I just am pointing this out because I think we need to see this through a very clear perspective, is that as it opens up, if it does, it's going to be a very complex experience. And if the government has the guts to tell us the truth about this, then, you know, a lot of people are going to get upset. Recently, the CIA has released a lot of documents, but that's not where this happens. The documents that we need are in the files of the FBI and the Air Force primarily. That's where the documents we really need are, and nobody's talking about releasing them. And you notice that in all of this tic-tac UFO stuff and everything that's going on, not a word from the Air Force, not a peep. I got a feeling there's a reason for that, and the reason for that is the Air Force has a hostile relationship with whatever's out there, and maybe they did that themselves. I know that when I was experiencing the visitors, it was hard not to think of them as something terribly evil and dangerous. When I would go out in those woods alone at night in the early days, I knew already they had a very definite predatory aspect to them, and it was pretty scary. But I did it anyway, and eventually, you know, cats and dogs are predators, and we have a wonderful relationship with them. We're predators too. And I've got a good relationship with the visitors, I think. And it's the same kind of relationship, only it's obviously much more complex than a human relationship with a dog. And, you know, they are ahead of us somewhat intellectually, but not that far, believe me. Okay. The other story is this blue UFO over the Hawaiian island of Oahu. Now, this is fascinating to me because it does seem to be a genuinely anomalous object. This happened on December 29th, and we are working to follow something up. Apparently, a lot of people saw this, and some during the day, and maybe even made images of it during the day. I'm not sure. If you are aware of this, and there have been some posts on Unknown Country that suggest some of you may be aware of this. If you are aware of this, please, please write Whitley@Strieber.com and let me know any information you have about additional sightings, because this is a very unusual case, and it's not so different from some other cases that have happened in the past. So it might be something that is very well worth following up on out there, and we're always looking for good out there stories. Okay, well, all said and done, next stop is a fabulous interview with Kim Chesney. We need more than ever right now our intuition to work for us. We need everything we can get our hands on. And having confidence in your intuition is 90% of the battle of learning how to use it. And Kim is a very powerful spirit indeed, as you will find. Intuition. Do you have it? I hope I have it, but I'm never sure. I'm never sure. We're going to be talking today to Kim Chesney, who is a globally recognized author and innovation leader in the tech sector especially, but she's written a phenomenal book called Radical Intuition, and what it does is it helps you become confident in your intuition. Kim, welcome to Dreamland.
Hi, Whitley. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to talk about all this stuff today.
Oh, good. Well, I'm excited too. Kim, you have this book is. But let me read from Chip Walter's blurb about it. Disrupting traditional conceptions about the way we think, create, and evolve, this book takes us deep into the mysteries of consciousness itself, where we discover what it really means to be human. So it's not just a guide to intuition. It looks like a guide to life and inner power. Let me ask you this. Where did this start in your life? Because this is a highly developed, this is not something you simply sat down and dashed off.
It's so true. And I've been working on this book for probably upwards of 10 years, doing a lot of research, and really I wanted to sort of hack intuition. I wanted to understand how we can use it as a complementary force to our thinking mind, and really to use both sides of our brain. And for me, you know, it started as a very young person. I was always very intuitive. I was an artist and you know, really drawn towards the spiritual and metaphysical side of life. And that led me on this lifelong quest to really connect all the dots and put intuition into a place where we could normalize it and join the conversation as a natural part of life that we all participate in.
Can you remember some particular areas of intuition that sort of started you on this? In other words, how did you come to realize that intuition could be so valuable and important?
Yeah, so, you know, as a young person, you know, I had a lot of metaphysical experiences. There were moments in my life where things would happen that I couldn't explain. I would know things that I shouldn't be able to know, or things would happen, bumps in the night, create all kinds of different things in my life that didn't fall into the pattern of everyday five senses and all the three dimensions that we're living in. So I really needed to make sense of the things happening to me as a young person. So I think part of this journey was in my roots. I mean, everyone's intuition has intuition. Everybody has it, no matter if you're a man or a woman. Every single person who's ever walked the face of the earth has intuition. It's just a matter of starting to open up to it. And I think for me, I had an openness that really led me to want to explore it more deeply.
Yeah, I hear that openness in your voice. You're just you're a very open sort of person, just naturally. Well, you know, yeah. I'm not. I'm the opposite. I am very careful. Like I see at the start of your book, Praise for Radical Intuition. There are a dozen blurbs at least here from people that have been willing to blurb your book. I don't get that. I never send my book out for blurbs, largely because I never hear back. But I'm, you know, because I'm Whitley.
I would write you a blurb.
Well, thank you, but I'm, you know, I'm Whitley Strieber, and people don't want to associate their valuable reputations with that name. So,
well,
but in any case,
I can totally relate to that, though. I mean, it was difficult, though, because with intuition, it's the same. It's a tricky subject, and it was people going out on a limb to validate intuition, because intuition is like this weird woo thing for so many people. So, and part of the reason why I did try so hard to get those endorsements for this was because I wasn't trying so much to endorse me as I really wanted people from all walks of life to show that they endorse intuition, and that intuition is something that we can have a conversation about, that it's normal, that it's actually valuable and something that we all need to look into instead of relegating to the fringes of the occult, you know?
Right. Well, you know, you have a wonderful quote at the beginning from Albert Einstein. It is intuition that improves the world, not just following the trodden path of thought. Intuition is the father of new knowledge, while empiricism is nothing but accumulation of old knowledge. Intuition, not intellect, is the open sesame of yourself. And of course, that's how he started, because he was when he was a young man, he noticed that no matter how carefully set the time he was working for the railroad in Switzerland, no matter how carefully set the time was at each station, it was always slightly, the clocks were always slightly different at the same time. And out of that came the theory of relativity, which is one of the most fundamental knowledge moments of the 20th century and of all humankind. Wow.
Absolutely. And Einstein was one of the biggest advocates of intuition. And he knew that. One of the most brilliant genius scientists in the world. The fact that he was able to attest to intuition in so many different ways. That's just one of so many quotes from him I had to pick from. It goes to show that, you know, there is something there that's really valuable. And it does really actually, it's ironic that this is all connected because intuition is also so deeply tied to relativity. That opened the doors to understanding this sort of quantum thinking and that intuition is actually a type of thinking that we just don't understand yet. But now that we understand quantum reality is a real thing, we can start to think in those ways. And suddenly there's a place for intuition.
Dreamlanders, we're taking a little break. So remember that Kim Chesney's website is kimchesney.com, KIMCHESTNEY.com. Her new book is Radical Intuition, A Revolutionary Guide to Using Your Inner Power, which I think we need badly right now. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. Listen to me now. From June of 2010, talking to Alan Lammers about an incredible thing that happened to him on the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia.
Here you are in South Sulawesi in the little town in the district of Sandu Batu. What happened? You were told something rather strange.
Well, we were told before we went, like my friends that I work with with the NGO, they told me that when you pack, because it kind of happened by accident, I went out to buy a raincoat. It rains quite a bit in this part of the world. And so I went out and I bought a yellow raincoat. And my friend said, I'm sorry, you can't take that to Walla Walla. And I said, well, why not? And he says, well, you can't wear that color. So anyways, excuse me. So I thought, okay, well, what colors can I wear? They said, well, you can only wear black or white. You cannot wear any bright colors, no bright green, especially no yellow. And, you know, that's all you should bring. And I said, well, what would happen? And they said, well, people disappear.
You will find the rest of that story, and it is brain-bending, in the June 5th edition of Dreamland, June 5, 2010 edition of Dreamland in the unknowncountry.com archive. This archive is one of the richest of its kind in the world, probably is the richest of its kind in the world, filled with extraordinary shows, of which this show is certainly one. This show with Alan Lammers, you will never have heard anything like it. It does what Dreamland is here to do. It opens your mind to the fact that we live inside a hidden reality that we prefer not to acknowledge, but not here. Here on unknowncountry.com, we do acknowledge it. We live in it and we love it. Subscribe today. You can't go wrong. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and get started. As always, Dreamland's theme music is The O of Pleasure from Ray Lynch's beautiful album, Deep Breakfast, available at raylynch.com. We're talking to Kim Chesney, Radical Intuition, A Revolutionary Guide to Using Your Inner Power. But this is much more than a book about a sort of guidebook where you give us a list of things that we can do to use our intuition. It's a book about a different vision of consciousness, I think, would be the best way to put it. And can you talk to us a little bit about how you view consciousness?
Yeah, and it's so deeply tied into intuition. So this is a wonderful point for us to kind of launch from. Understanding what I call in the book the three intuitive levels of consciousness, which is really the different ways that we can relate to intuition and the world around us. So really breaking it down into very simple terms, we have unconsciousness, which isn't total unconsciousness. It's really just being awake, but not really being aware of our environment, going through our 9-to-5, not really paying attention to the world around us or what things mean or the really higher or deeper aspects of life. And then we have consciousness. You know, that's that moment when we start to wake up and we're able to move into mindfulness and presence and really experience the world and know that there's something more to life, something deeper. And then ultimately we start to move into higher consciousness or super consciousness, which is this place where we're able to touch into information that is extraordinary, to these things that are supposedly impossible, and to know things that are impossible for us to know and experience things that are supposedly impossible for us to experience. So intuition is really an interplay or of a downloading from this higher place of super consciousness where we're able to connect beyond the limits of our quote-unquote mind-made world.
Now, I'd like to get a little bit deeper into the archetypes of intuition. What is an archetype, first of all, in your view?
Well, for me, in the purpose of this book, and I created these four archetypes to sort of represent the different ways that people can connect with their intuition. And I wanted people to understand that, you know, when I was doing this work early on, I was talking to everybody about intuition, and I realized everybody had a different idea of what intuition was. Some people thought it was like a feeling. Other people said it was a knowing or a spiritual experience or a creative idea. So I really wanted to create a way for people to understand the different ways that their intuition talked to them. So this idea of the archetypes came up, and you know, a lot of this work ties in deeply with Jung's work and his four cognitive functions. And really understanding our intuition in terms of the same four pathways as the Jungian cognitive functions that ultimately boil down and relate to the four elements of human being, body, mind, heart, and spirit. So the archetypes I created to represent the way we connect with our intuition through each of these different ways. So basically it's just a representation or sort of a symbolic understanding of the energy that you embody with each of these pathways of intuition. If you connect with your intuition with your body, you're a natural healer type, right? You're connected with wellness, and you understand the way that your physical intuition can work. And I know you've talked with physical intuitives, and it's a very powerful thing. Also, then, if you work with the mind, the intuition of the mind is that knowingness, that inner guidance that guides us every day of our life and connects us to our inner wisdom. And that archetype is the sage, the wise one. And then thirdly, the intuition of the heart. You know, this is the archetype of the genius and the visionary. You know, the person like Steve Jobs, who uses their intuition to go out and create something amazing that changes the world and something new and different, or the artist or the activist, people who are called and have a passion to go out there and bring their intuition out into the world to make change. And then ultimately, the last archetype is the archetype of the mystic. And that's where we connect with our spirit and the beyond and this beautiful, magical connection that we have to source and all that's beyond the reality that we live in.
We all live in all of these realities. And one of the things about intuition that seems to me to be so important is confidence. You have to know what kind of intuition you're looking for, and then be confident in it. Like, a perfect example is the moment when Steve Jobs realized that a radio could a two-way radio could become a telephone, which was a moment of intuition that completely changed the world. One guy. And there are so many others. I know that I want to circle back before we go on with that to the healer level. The reason is that I do an exercise called the sensing exercise. I do it three times a day. And what it involves, I'm not going to explain it in detail because my listeners all know what it is. Or if you don't know, listen up. I'll explain it in just enough detail to where you will know. What happens is you take your attention and you split it between your thoughts and your body so that you're experiencing a sensation of your body while your thoughts are still flowing. And this relates in my mind to the healer level of intuition. Because this is a level of intuition that involves the body.
And, you know, a lot of – one of the reason I'd been doing this since 1970, and it's the reason the visitors showed up in my life in the first place, because
– Interesting.
Yeah, well, it causes – apparently causes the nervous system to glow in a certain way that can be seen in other levels of reality.
Ah.
Now, what I'm very curious about the healing level of intuition and what you know about it and how it works, because I think it's connected somehow.
Yeah, I think what you just said was spot on. I think very much with our intuition affects our physical body and our energy levels. And I love this story because that's actually something I wanted to talk with you about because, you know, everything for me that happened in my life that was extraordinary in terms of these metaphysical experiences or these extraordinary experiences were really a byproduct of things that I was doing within. You know, it wasn't out of nowhere. These things that happened, these extraordinary things in my life at least, haven't come out of nowhere. It's been part of a meaningful process that's been happening within. And I love what you just said about this, you know, creating this shift within you that allowed you to vibrate on a different level or for other dimensions to be able to perceive things about you that normally when we're walking around in our everyday life, they can't perceive. And I have very similar experiences with that in terms of I really think that once you start to embody your intuition and you shift that energy to another level, you are able, it's like a beacon, you are able to connect with these sort of higher realms and the beyond in all new ways that we can't even imagine.
Now, on your website, you've got a lot of things about, you know, sort of things you can do. And you have an intuition lab, master classes, and so forth. What is a class in intuition? What do you do? I'm very curious about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it is something that, for me, is, like I said, it's a process. So we work with students, and the one that we start the year with, Illuminate, that we're working on now, is, it's an inner journey. It's an awakening. It's a awakening into presence and awareness of yourself and a reconnection with yourself. And we start there, getting into that stillness and that space so we can open space for our intuition to speak. And then beyond that, I teach people what to look for with intuition. You know, what intuition is, how does it arrive, how is it different from your other thoughts and feelings and fears and critical ideas that come into your head. And then I talk about the intuitive process. How does it work? How does it flow through us? How do we learn to follow it? And ultimately with the end goal of helping people to understand how their unique intuition feels, because it's different for all of us. As you and I know, everyone experiences this differently. So I help people to really get in touch with their unique brand of intuition, and so that they can recognize it when it comes to them. And then ultimately, like we touched on earlier, is live with confidence. Be able to confidently follow it and say, you know what, this is real. I'm going to believe this. I'm going to own it. And I'm going to live this authentic life, ultimately.
I'm going to read a few sentences from the book. Forget everything the world has told you about intuition. Gone are the old days of crystal balls and fortune telling. Today we live in a different kind of world, and we are beginning to see intuition in a radical new way. Mm-hmm. Now, you go on to talk about intuition being part of the design of the human being. Can you expand on that a bit?
Yeah. So I really, truly believe that one of the worst things that's happened to humankind is that we've been told that intuition isn't real or that it doesn't exist. This kind of repression of intuition has caused us to move into the state of over-reliance on the thinking mind, when really we have two beautiful sides of our existence. We have a rational side, an intellectual side, and we have an intuitive and creative side. And when they start to work together, that's when we're able to really achieve these extraordinary things and move into these states of extraordinary awareness and being. So really understanding that we were designed to be really smart, but we were also designed to be really intuitive and creative. So I'm very excited with this idea of the intuition revolution that's happening now, seeing intuition and creativity starting to have a role that as we move into this post-information age and machines are getting so smart that we don't need to worry about that anymore. We can focus on rebalancing our minds and our bodies and our souls and becoming more intuitive and tapping into that inner genius that's been there latent for all of these centuries.
Yeah, now that inner genius, that is an interesting phrase because it's there. It's in mankind. It's the what the Greek ancient Greeks called genius was a sort of inner spirit, an inner presence, as it were. Can you tell us where that is and how it works, and is it really entirely contained inside us?
Yeah. So it's just the age old saying, "Know thyself." Right. It's within us. It's this higher self or this higher level of awareness that we can have access to within us. So really, you know, I look at it all in terms of energy and you thinking in terms of computers and quantum physics. Think about the world as, you know, data, like as if we're living in a simulation and we know that time is an illusion. So everything that's ever happened or has happened or is happening now is out there in a form of data. So if we go within us, if we go to that sort of cord of connection within us to this higher being, our intuition is what unites us with that cloud of knowledge and wisdom and information that's out there all around us. So when we go within and listen to the nudges of our inner voice and listen to the promptings of our inner guidance or the feelings that it brings into our bodies, we're actually connecting with a kind of wisdom that's beyond what our rational everyday mind can connect with. So really, it's sort of like going through that wormhole. We're able to arrive in a higher place of wisdom than we would if we were trying to think it through. But it's so easy. It happens in a flash and in an instant because it works in this sort of quantum way.
When you say a quantum way, quantum, you mean it's kind of indeterminate. What exactly
right.
Can you define that?
Yeah, so it can sort of, I do these little exercises that we call going through the wormhole when we're using our intuition, because normally, right, so say, let's use an example, we're trying to, like Einstein was a perfect example. So there was a formula once he was talking about how he could not solve this problem, and he was thinking and nothing he could do, he could just not reconcile it. And then one night he woke up in the middle of the night and the answer just came to him. So And this is what I'm talking about with this intuition. It just intuitively popped in with this moment of insight, with this instant download, right, that happens when we don't have to think it through. We go straight from the question to the answer without all of the figuring it out in between.
And that's the interesting part, without all of the figuring out. That's what Einstein did in the moment he mm-hmm. came to the understanding of E equals MC squared.
Exactly.
And it's also the moment, I forget the name of the scientist who discovered nuclear fission. He was walking down a street in London, and it just suddenly, it was there.
Yep.
He understood it. And that's what we need to be able to access more, in a more organized way, I think.
Right.
'Cause, go ahead.
Yeah, we're totally on the same page, because that's sort of become my mission in life, is just helping people to understand that if you have an experience like this, it exists and it can be repeatable and learnable, right? So being in the state where Einstein wanted to, you know, have more of these epiphanies and really lean into these sort of extraordinary knowings instead of just writing them off as some fluke, right? So there's things we can do to open space and align ourselves so that we receive more of these extraordinary insights that are really it's the highest form of learning and wisdom that we can receive.
And when you say receive, that's an interesting word, because it's not generate. When you say receive, where from?
Yeah, I really just think it's a matter of connecting to that higher wisdom through that intuitive download that it's out there, and it's our higher selves, really. We hear that term a lot, so I sometimes am reluctant to use it because I think it's overused, but that's essentially what it is. I look at, you know, there's the universe and the ultimate source of everything out there, and then there's our little small egoic minds, and somewhere in between is this higher self or our higher being that's able to see things from this higher place and give us this information and this guidance that we need. Because this job is for us to fulfill ourselves and to live our highest life. Like, that's what life wants from us. It wants us to succeed and to make a better life for everybody and raise the vibration of this planet. And so this higher self is guiding us, each and every one of us, to do our own unique role in that process.
And when that guidance, I feel that guidance in myself often. And who is it doing it? I guess what I'm getting is I don't think it's inside our bodies. I think it's coming from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is one of the deepest questions of all. What is the source of this information? You know, are there beings that are providing this information? Are those beings part of ourself? Are we somehow connected? And I think the answer to that is sort of one of those conundrums that we can't really wrap our brains around. Well, it is an outside source, but it's also an inside source. So I think it's one of those oxymoronic situations where, you know, we have things like guardian angels. You know, there are beings that are out there looking out for us that can work with our intuition. But ultimately, the way I see it is that it is a deep, higher, both deeper and higher, part of our own being.
Well, you know, I had an incredible experience with a guardian angel one time. I was driving, Ann and I were driving. This is way back when communion was at its height, the communion tour and everything, and I was enjoying, or enduring, I should say. My first, or second, I guess, of what has become about 6 15-minute in my life and of public notoriety. So we were driving from a friend's house to our house in the country, and we were in a Volvo, a beautiful car. It was about 6 months old, and suddenly stopped and rolled over to the side of the road, and we couldn't. And then a few minutes later, it started up on its own, and we proceeded to the house. Now, about a year later, I went to a psychic at the Lilydale Assembly in the Spiritualist Church of America. Gregory Keene was his name, and during the thing, reading, he suddenly said, "I'm seeing your car. Did your car stop at some point without warning?" And I said, "Why, yes." I hadn't mentioned it to him. I hadn't even thought about it since it happened. And he said, "Well, I want you to know that there's someone here who's telling me they're your guardian angel. And they did that because if you had proceeded down that highway, you would have been seen by people who were looking for you and who would have followed you home and killed you both."
Oh, my gosh.
I know it. And then I was telling – we were at the Chautauqua Institution in upstate New York, which is near the Lilydale Assembly.
Yeah, I've also been there. Another beautiful place.
Oh, it's wonderful.
My stomping grounds, Whitley.
yeah. Those are beautiful places. This country is so full of such deep places. This is one of the – people don't realize that we bring our spirituality with us, all of us. I've been to some of the most powerful spiritual places I've ever known in the United States. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So I'm telling my son, Annie's in the car. We're in the same Volvo. We're driving along near the Chautauqua Institution on the little highway that's there. And I tell him the story, and I say, and Gregory Keene said that was my guardian angel. And I just wonder if it's true. And you know what happened? The car stopped again at that moment.
No!
Yeah.
At that moment. I love it. These are the things I get so excited about. I love hearing stories like this.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. And I have to say, wow and wow again. The thing is that you have you do have somebody. I know you do.
Yes.
And free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a little a break, which I hope is sufficiently annoying at a point like this in the show.
I know, this is such a good spot.
I encourage you to go ahead and subscribe to Unknown Country and keep us rolling. We'll be right back. You know, we live right now in a time of great upheaval and personal loneliness and also dread. The dread comes from the fact that we've been taught that we are only material bodies, and therefore we're terrified of death as never before. But it's not true. And in my book, Jesus, A New Vision, I look at this in a completely new way, not through the lens of Christianity and not through the lens of secularism either. By exploring the life of Jesus and his teachings in this new way, Jesus, A New Vision sheds fresh light on the meaning and power of his life, his parables. It explores the mysteries of the Gospels of Thomas and Mary with fresh insight, and it explains why he did what he did, which was to commit suicide by crucifixion. Then it goes into what the Shroud of Turin really is. It is not a medieval forgery. Something extraordinary happened in that tomb. To find out, read Jesus, A New Vision. It is truly a first. It's in pre-publication on Amazon right now. It'll be out as a Kindle on January the 15th, then as a paperback, a hardback, and an audiobook shortly thereafter.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on Earthfiles.com.
We are having a blast with, that is to say, talking to Kim Chesney, her new book, Radical Intuition, A Revolutionary Guide to Using Your Inner Power. Her website, KimChesney, that's with a T, .com, and you can get her involved with Kim on the website because she does courses and things as well as the book. But now, let's talk a little bit about who is there for us beyond our own souls. There's someone out there, clearly.
Yeah, and you know, this honestly, this is my life, and this is the kind of stuff that happens so often in my life that it just becomes normal to me now. And when I see other people experiencing it, I get so excited because I really feel like, you know, what you experienced was a validation. Not only did you have that insight, but the fact that it happened a second time, that it was there to show you that, yes, this was real, wasn't your imagination, this isn't a coincidence, right? Our intuition and those that are behind our intuition want us to know and remind us that there is so much more to life. And that's what's so great about intuition and what gets me so excited is because there is this wondrous world that we just become immune to. We just get desensitized to life going through our little routines every day when there's this beautiful, amazing world out there that we can't even comprehend and we're just starting to scratch the surface of. So I love stories like that and opening up this conversation to guardian angels. And, you know, there is life beyond physical life, and that's something that we have to accept and try again to normalize. And I think in the years ahead, and you're actually one of the groundbreakers of doing things, so I'm so excited to be here talking with you today. This is the work that you've done over the past decades has really opened the conversation for knowing that there are different kinds of life than just our own human existence. And when we can start to process that in a way that's not fear-based and that's not fringe, then we can actually start to have real conversations about what does that look like? How are we really living, you know?
But the key thing is not fear-based and not fringe. And
right.
Now, you say that with such confidence. Why do you say, what would be fringy, and why is what you're doing different from that? I won't even get into me, but you need to go there. But why is what you're doing different from that?
Well, I mean, it does have its roots. You know, I look at it as an evolution and that we're all participating in. And I'm just building on, you know, the foundation that you and people ahead of me have built, and trying to bring into the conversation a little bit of a different sort of normalcy that in the past we've been unable to do. So how it's not really different, except for the fact that we know more about reality now than we did 20, 30 years ago, right? We understand that things like this are actually scientifically possible. So that's one thing working in our favor. And then also really making this shift into this new era, or this new intuitive era, where we're starting to move away from this reliance on the mind and looking to these other things, these more sensitive areas of life, to really start defining what it means to be human. So I don't think that it's all that different. And, you know, what I'm doing is really, you know, in the beginning for me, it was scary until I learned to understand it. And until we are bold enough and brave enough to go to these places without fear to actually understand them, then we're just going to be afraid of the mystery.
I think that's so critical, because it's above all things, it's fear that gets in our way. Fear that my intuition isn't working. Fear that this feeling I have isn't anything. Fear that it's somehow something dark. Fear that if I open this particular door, there'll be something dangerous behind it. How do you respond to those fears, Kim?
Well, yeah, it's a really important thing to talk about, because really intuition and fear are mutually exclusive. You can't live intuitively and also be in a state of fear. So facing our fears and developing a trust in life is one of the most essential things that we have to do as we start to live in this, with this lifestyle of insightfulness and intuition. Because when we become intuitive and we follow our intuition, we have to trust it, and we have to trust in life, that life has our back, that no matter, you know, even if something's difficult that we're going through, that there's a reason for it that we maybe just can't see in this moment. So shifting into this place of trust has been so huge for me. And it was really the big awakener for me, because you know, when I was young, I was afraid of all this stuff. I had all of this stuff happening. I was terrified. I thought I was going crazy. I thought that, you know, my imagination was running away with me. It's like all the things that you just mentioned. So learning to come to terms with that and arming myself with the understanding that I live in a meaningful universe. This isn't random. Things aren't just happening to me to torture me. Everything's meaningful. And when I can embrace life that way and start to step into these unknown places with trust in life, now we're able to go beyond. Now I can go to the next place and the next level and see what's there.
There's often a feeling that somebody did this to me, that this, in other words, the feeling is that when something goes wrong, you were harmed by some dark force. Mm-hmm. Is that a reality, do you think? Can that happen?
Not usually. I'm going to say not usually, because most of the time when things go wrong, you know, first of all, we probably weren't listening to our intuition. That's like the number one thing. Famous last words, right? So when things go wrong, a lot of times we haven't listened to our intuition. We get off track, but there's still a learning lesson involved. And our intuition's always there to help us to get back on track and to pull us back into the right direction. So we fail forward, and there's lessons in it, no matter which way we decide to go in our life. But, you know, that being said, we do have to be clear of our inner space. And that's one thing I've learned over the years, is we want to live from a place of peace and high vibration, because there is something out there called the law of attraction. And if we have things inside us, anger, unresolved emotions, unresolved fears, all of these things can also attract that like-minded energy. So it's not necessarily that like demons are out there trying to murder you, but you can attract that negative energy in those negative situations that can be harmful by harboring that energy yourself.
Yeah, because I think that people who are angry, and a lot of people are really angry, it builds a kind of poison. It creates a poison inside them, and they get angrier and angrier and more poisoned until they're not even hardly human anymore. Is that true, or am I going too far?
No, I don't think that that's going too far, because I think that we hold on to that energy, and we can, there's some crazy stuff going on in the world right now that would back that up, that when we hold on to that negative energy and we build that negative energy, it grows and snowballs. And, you know, when I was having my challenges as a young person, and I went to see a medium named Ralph Jordan, and he said to me, he was a very wise man, and he said, listen, you can't attract anything to you that's not already in you. And though at first I was like, wait, what are you saying? Do I have bad things in me? But what it taught me to do was realize that I had those fears in there, even if I was unconscious of it. And this is part of those levels of consciousness we talked about earlier. When we're in this unconscious place, we unconsciously hold on to those protective, you know, self-protective fears and those anxieties and those resentments and that unforgiveness. And unforgiveness is so huge when it comes to all of this stuff, because when we harbor that resentment, that negativity, it creates a block. It creates a block between us and life and the flow of life. And the more you do that, the more you just can build up this sort of toxic energy place that not only attracts all kinds of stuff to you that you don't really want, but also puts you in a position where you can do harm to other people without even being aware of it.
Without even being aware of it, yeah. The toxicity kind of becomes part of the atmosphere of your soul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Your inner space, toxic inner space.
Toxic inner space, exactly. And when we're angry, like a lot of people are terribly, terribly angry right now over politics. And I don't want to get into politics here. But when we have got anger inside us that we can't release and come to peace with, what then, Kim? What then?
Yeah, I've been asking myself that question every day for the last week, I'll tell you, because, you know, whatever it is, I would like to help the world do more of it, because right now we're seeing so much of that around us. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know, just personally speaking, you know, when we have those moments of anger and we have these situations of unresolved frustration, you know, the most important thing that we can do is let it go, is let it go. And if we have to get into that place, like Eckhart Tolle always says, is resist nothing. The more resistance that we live in, the more unhappy we're going to be. So sometimes we just have to accept what comes and flow with life, and eventually we'll find our way in that. But releasing all that stuff, I mean, we have to do ourselves a favor. The more we hold on to it, the more we just hurt ourselves.
Now, what you talk about mindful intuition in the book, and in the third half hour of the show, we're going to be talking about the nitty-gritty. We're going to be talking about something called the Sage's Workshop. But right now, I want to lead toward that by discussing our inner wisdom. You start out the chapter on mindful intuition with a quote: thinking is not the highest human faculty. It is only a stage in development. Just as we were able to rise above instinct and develop reason, we must one day pass beyond discursive thinking and enter into a higher mode of knowing. And I thought to myself when I read that, boy, is that a powerful key. Mm-hmm. Because where all of that rage and anger is in the thinking level. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it doesn't matter. I'm not talking about people who are disappointed that Trump lost or people who are frightened about what happened at the Capitol, any of that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about beyond that, that you have a level of rage that comes at you from the world around you. Now, how do we do this to move to a level of higher mode of knowing? Excuse me. What is mindful intuition?
Yeah, and I love that quote too. I think that really just sums up so eloquently this sort of process of evolution and growth cognitively that we're capable of as human beings, that most of us don't even know or aren't aware of. So I look at it in terms of transformation and growth, and and a sort of evolution, maybe even physical evolution to a degree. We have so much of our minds and our brains that we don't use. You know, there's latent abilities and we don't know what it's all for. And even beyond the physical aspect, this moving into intuition becomes part of this intuition revolution that I keep talking about. Because here we are, we've gone to school for our whole lives, we've trained our minds, we're brilliant, we're smart. And the next level of working with our minds, going beyond what the machines do, doing these extraordinary things, calls for a development of this intuitive mind. And yes, it's creative. Yes, it's intuitive, but it's more than that. It has an ability to tap into a type of wisdom that's there, a knowledge that's there all around us that we can instantly access, as opposed to having to go through all these, you know, get our PhDs and figure it out. There's simple answers. And that's the thing about intuition. It's so simple. It comes in a moment. We simply receive it. And when we make the shift into using this mindful intuition and being present and being aware of that there's more to the reality than that we live in than what we can touch and see and feel, then we are able to open up to this higher wisdom and use it.
And in fact, we're also able to open ourselves up so that what wants to help us can. Like the guardian angel experience, goodness knows how many times I have ignored that. And This was one so important that the guardian angel had to actually intervene in my life, in our life, Anne's life too, because obviously the angel was guarding us both. Because we were needed, I guess, and someone did not want us to die at that point. So,
And imagine if you had gone in there and just kept trying to start that car up, and no matter what, you were going to keep going and keep going, right?
Right.
That's how so many of us work, right?
Right.
We have to relax into it.
Well, in that case, that would not have happened because it was so mysterious. I mean, you have no idea. You're driving along the highway. Everything is perfect. And you're in a Volvo, which I don't know what they're like now, but in those days, they were incredibly reliable cars. And it stops completely on its own. It just, all the lights turn on, and you just sort of have to force it over to the side of the road because even the power steering is gone. So I was definitely not going to be starting up until it decided. And then it took a couple of minutes. I turned the key a couple times, and it was just dead. And I said, Annie, we're going to have to walk to a gas station. And it started up on its own.
Wow.
So
nothing wrong with the car.
No, nothing wrong with the car.
Again.
Which is, it's why I'm here today, I'm sure. Yeah. It's why we had the life that we had after that moment.
Yeah.
So
what a gift.
But at the same time, the thing that's so interesting to me about your book and your courses, I've never taken one, but is that you can learn to have a relationship with that level of reality. I call it a guardian angel, but it could be, you can think of it in a whole lot of different ways. A relationship is possible with this. Now, speaking of relationships, Free Dreamlanders, we are coming to the end of our time together. Kim Chesney's book is Radical Intuition, A Revolutionary Guide to Using Your Inner Power. Her website is kimchesney.com. I would strongly suggest that you take the bull by the horns and do this. And same subscribers, even though we're going to be keeping on together for another half hour to get into the remarkable story of the Sage's Workshop and understanding inner guidance. Still, everyone, act on your own behalf. Act. Nothing happens unless you act.
Amen.
Free Dreamlanders, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Strieber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Strieber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.